Listen local.
Live from the WJFF studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, the Black Library, in collaboration with the Sullivan County chapter of the NAACP, is celebrating Juneteenth tomorrow, but the annual celebration comes in the midst of a harsh reality for the community space in Monticello. Its funding is running out. We'll find out what it means for the future of the Black Library. Liberty Central School District is expanding its pre-kindergarten program for next year's school year, and registration is open now. There's only 84 slots available. We'll learn more about how to apply and who qualifies from Superintendent Dr. Patrick Sullivan. Plus, Moving Toward Health with Maggie Fitzpatrick, and the Deepwater Literary Festival returns to Narrowsburg this weekend. Every day this week, we're featuring authors and events. Today, local writer Jennifer Kabat, whose book The Eighth Moon examines rural populism in the Catskills. First, the news.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. President Biden is expected to announce new protections for some undocumented spouses of U.S. citizens. As NPR's Franco Ordonez reports, the president is scheduled to make the announcement at a White House event today, marking the 12th anniversary of an Obama-era action protecting people brought to the U.S. illegally as children.
The president's executive measures will protect about a half million spouses from deportation. These are people who have lived in the country for at least 10 years. It'll allow them to apply for green cards without having to leave the country. The steps would also protect about 50,000 children under the age of 21 whose parent is in the country illegally but is married to a U.S. citizen. Immigration has become a top issue in the 2024 election as an increasing number of Americans see border enforcement as a major problem. President Biden recently took executive actions to limit the number of migrants who can seek asylum at the southern border at a given time. Franco Ordonez, NPR News, the White House.
The CEO of troubled aircraft maker Boeing will testify before a Senate subcommittee today. Dave Calhoun will be questioned by senators about safety. The Justice Department says Boeing has violated a settlement over two deadly crashes that killed 346 people. Connecticut Democratic Senator Richard Blumenthal told CNN he thinks federal prosecutors should act against Boeing.
There's mounting evidence that Boeing should be prosecuted, and I'm going to withhold judgment until we finish this hearing and the investigation. The Justice Department is now doing its own inquiry, but I do think there's near overwhelming evidence that prosecution is important to sending a message, a deterrent message.
Blumenthal says another Boeing whistleblower has come forward. He says the whistleblower is alleging more problems with Boeing safety culture. Stocks opened higher this morning after a weaker-than-expected report on retail sales. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average rose about 80 points in early trading.
Retail sales rose by a tepid 0.1% in May, a sign that shoppers are growing more cautious and keeping a tighter grip on their pocketbooks. Sales figures for April were also revised lower. Grocery stores, restaurants, and gas stations all saw a drop in sales last month, although the decline at gas stations was smaller than the drop in gasoline prices. On the other hand, sales at car dealers jumped last month by 0.8%. U.S. manufacturing output rose in May after falling in both March and April. Utility output was also up last month. Utilities could get a boost in June as well, as hot temperatures baking the country mean plenty of demand for air conditioning. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
On Wall Street, the Dow is up 80 points. The Nasdaq is down 10. This is NPR. Forecasters say a dangerous heat wave is parked over the Midwest, stretching to the Northeast. Temperatures will climb toward or pass 100 degrees from Iowa to parts of interior Maine today. There are wildfires burning across the West. In southern New Mexico, thousands of people are evacuating ahead of two wildfires that are getting very close together. In California, a wildfire north of Los Angeles has also forced people to flee. Researchers in California say they've developed a new way to prepare people for wildfire evacuations. From member station KQED, Catherine Monahan reports they're doing it with a board game.
Dozens of people are gathered over maps of the town of Tomales in Northern California. And in this game, the map is the board. Players start where they would be in real life, and their game piece represents the vehicle that they would actually use to evacuate. Tom Majorana, a professor of design at UC Davis, helped create the game.
The playfulness of it allows us to think about these things that are really stressful in a way that is lower stress, but yet still helps us kind of start to unravel some of the things that are going on in that really kind of dire situation.
The research team hopes to play with other communities in the future. For NPR News, I'm Catherine Monahan in Tomales, California.
Forecasters have posted tropical storm warnings for much of Texas's Gulf Coast and northeastern Mexico. A large, disorganized storm system is going to bring heavy rain, coastal flooding, and strong winds to the area. I'm Corva Coleman, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Progressive Insurance. Progressive is looking for individuals in a variety of career fields who want to help build a culture of inclusiveness. More information, including application, at progressive.com/careers.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. We'll get to that story about the Black Library's funding running out in just a few minutes. But first, the hottest weather in years is here. Heat advisory remains in effect from noon today until 8 p.m. on Thursday. Heat index values up to 100 expected, and hot temperatures and high humidity may cause heat illnesses. Right now, it's 79 degrees in Liberty, but the real feel heat index, it's already at 90. At a press conference earlier this morning, Governor Kathy Hochul warned New Yorkers to take precautions during this week's extreme heat wave. The governor has set up cooling stations and deployed the National Guard to portions of upstate. From the New York Public News Network, Karen DeWitt reports.
Hochul says 50 National Guard members have been deployed to Syracuse and Albany, where the heat is expected to be the worst on Tuesday. It will be bad later in the week in the downstate area. Many schools are on a half-day schedule, and state highway workers are on limited shifts. Pools and beaches at state parks are open, and Hochul urges New Yorkers who have the Juneteenth holiday off on Wednesday to get in the water or simply stay home in a cool place. New York, for the first time, has advanced maps to show the extent of the heat, but Hochul says you don't need sophisticated equipment to know that it's hot.
We don't need any fancy data to tell us this. It's going to be extremely hot and uncomfortable. In fact, it'll be dangerously hot.
While today's temperatures are expected into the 90s, it's the several nights and days of sustained heat expected that will be the most dangerous. Hochul and State Health Commissioner James McDonald say there's a cumulative effect of the heat so early in the season. They say New Yorkers should watch out for the elderly and vulnerable for signs of heat stroke or exhaustion. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt for the New York Public News Network.
And a reminder, stay safe and prepare during this heat wave. As Karen said, check up on relatives and neighbors, drink plenty of fluids, stay in an air-conditioned room, and stay out of the sun. If you have to be outside, take extra precautions. Wear lightweight and loose-fitting clothing. Try to limit strenuous activities to early morning or evening. And take action when you see symptoms of heat exhaustion and heat stroke. Now, the Black Library, in collaboration with the Sullivan County chapter of the NAACP, is celebrating Juneteenth tomorrow, but the annual celebration comes in the midst of a harsh reality for the community space in Monticello. Its funding is running out. Radio Catskill's Patricio Rubio spoke with Black Library co-founders Douglas Schindler and Mike Davis about what that means for the future of the Black Library.
We were recipients of the CRNY Artist Employment Program, which was a huge grant given to artists who partner with nonprofit organizations to start an artist-led project. At the time, I was working with HVAC, working for HVAC, I should say. I met with Tal Beery, who was also working with HVAC at the time, brought Mike in, came with the idea of the Black Library, and we were awarded that grant. So that grant period was 2 years. They used COVID relief funds to fund the project. And that 2 years will be up for us at the end of this month on June 30th. So once June 30th comes around, we will no longer be in a partnership with HPAC for ZRNY. We'll be our own independent organization. And with that, we won't be getting pulses of grant funding from CRNY anymore. We'll basically just have what we have left over from those grant funds, which we have an all right amount left over. But that amount will basically carry us for a month and a half, 2 months. So we'll need to make up the difference for the rest of the year.
Yeah. When I remember starting the Black Library, you first started out like sort of a satellite type of thing, getting donations for books. And then finally you got an actual physical space now that's in on Broadway in Monticello. Mm-hmm. So what happens to this space once the grant funding is over? Are you continue into the space until money runs out, or are you actively looking for other locations?
We'll be continuing in the space until funding runs out. We'll be continuing here. We have a good relationship with Land Bank, and then we have a good relationship with RUPCO. We'll be taking ownership of the building. So RUPCO will be taking over ownership, and then they're going to be doing renovations in the space. They know about us. They like what we do and definitely want us to be here in this location after they take over and renovate. But it's just about making sure that we can keep the project alive to get to that point. But yeah, we would be here.
So this sort of remind folks, exactly what the Black Library is all about and some of the events you had this past year alone. I remember we spoke to you not too long ago about you had a fashion show. We interviewed Malik, who was one of the artists in residence. So there's a lot of things going on in the Black Library this past year. If you want to sort of review that and see, talk about those some of the events.
Yeah, definitely. So the Black Library is a library and community art space focused on celebrating and educating on Black history and culture. But we also really are, both Michael and I are artists, of course, photographers, designers, and painters. So we really wanted to shine a spotlight on the arts in Sullivan County and definitely in Monticello specifically. There are so many artists here. So we do a lot of art-focused programming. We like to try and be an incubator for the arts in Sullivan County as much as we can and help out as many artists as we can. Of course, we have our huge collection of literature, probably like 900, maybe 1,000 books at this point, all donated to the community and from Mike and I's personal collection. So the community has access to all the books. We do have our artist residency program where we give artists a studio space for free for 3 months at a time. And then they have a group show at the end of that period. We get art supply donations specifically for those artists, but we also get general art supply donations for anybody that wants to walk in and just ease their mind and create. As always, we offer a safe space where people are free to express themselves in any way they wish, or if they just need to relax, use our Wi-Fi, we're here for that. In terms of a lot of the events that we do, we do artist talks. We have our artist residency. We do artist like workshops, like painting workshops, mixed media workshops, photography workshops. We've workshopped with the local school districts, Fallsburg. We had Monticello High School students as our last group of resident artists, just helping them see what's possible in the arts, letting them know that their art is wanted and their art is needed, and that people want to see them express themselves and that it's important. And then, of course, we do financial literacy workshops, other educational workshops, sustainability workshops. We have another Black Agriculture Weekend coming up in collaboration with Denison Hill in August. The first one was a huge success, and we're hoping that this one is even bigger and better. Just teaching people how to garden, how to start their own garden at home, how to plant seeds, cultivate those crops, learn how to grow them, and then learn how to actually use those different plants that they learn how to grow in dishes that they can make at home as well. So they learn how to grow these foods and then how to use these foods. Black Agriculture Workshop. As you mentioned, we had the fashion show. The fashion show was received incredibly. We had so many people in here, probably over 200 people in attendance for that event. The place was packed, all local designers, all local models. So we're really about shining a spotlight on artists, makers, and just the people of Sullivan County, and really giving them a platform to express themselves, giving them a place to be. Mike speaks to it a little bit better than I do generally in terms of giving people a place to be rather than the other vices that have a pretty strong grip on our county. So we look at ourselves as right now as the alternative, but hopefully in the future as the primary. People come here instead of going to those vices that might have a hold on them. I don't know if you want to hype and speak to that portion of it.
Yeah, I just think we have an opportunity to provide something that's been lacking in our community since I've been here. I grew up in Monticello. I've been here since I was 6 years old. And there were It's in points throughout my childhood where there were places to go, places to express yourself or places to congregate with people of your age range or like-minded individuals. And there are not too many, if any, of those places left currently. We don't have as much as a well-kept park or basketball court with actual lines on it right now. So these are things that we're hoping to offer an alternative to, but also further along the line, find ways to combat or mitigate these things or lack of things in our community as much as possible. Yeah, I can speak on this all day. To be completely honest, there's a handful of statistics that go with the area that are not the utmost positive, with all due respect. I think this space and any space that can offer similar things to our villagers, our youth, the members of this county, in an inclusive and positive manner, I think the better.
Yeah. And speaking to one of your artists in residence, Malik, and that was something he really enjoyed about the Black Library, was he had a space to go to a community. He joined a community, and it was really important for him to be with like-minded people in his hometown that's near him. And he was really appreciative. I'm looking, you know, I look to your Instagram a lot, and you had a paint and sip event a couple of months back, and it was a packed house. It looks like that on social media, but I was really taken by one of the comments someone left on there. And I just want to read that to you guys now. As one of the comments that was left on that paint and sip photo was, and I quote, "You guys are appreciated for what you have brought to our community. You have provided a safe haven for me and my children to express our artistic creativity. For that, I show gratitude. I truly respect and love for my Black Library family." And that's exactly what I think you have brought to Monticello and that part of the county, is a place for folks to go who are artistic or not even artistic, just a place to go that you mentioned before, the alternative of other things to do in Monticello other than going to somewhat of a basketball court and other things around that neighborhood. You really brought, like the person said, a safe haven for artists to come to, and a safe space. So it's really so sad a little bit that you might lose the space or might be temporarily taken out of the space, but it really seems like you made a sort of a movement in Monticello. And I think it's really important to continue that movement that you have created there. Something much needed, and is, you have done it in a unique way. So I apologize for that.
Thank you.
And so now, so the greed is now to find additional funding after this month is over. Is that correct?
Yeah. We're working on everything that we'll need for the fundraising. But yeah, that is what we need to do, is work on the funding through the end of this year. And then next year should be a little bit easier because we're working on grant applications and stuff that will get us grant funds next year if we win those grants, of course. But the options for this year are a lot more limited than the options for next year, just because there's a lot of grants that we should have been applying for in 23 that we didn't apply for and didn't get for this year.
You have an opportunity coming up for folks to come visit the Black Library. You are having a Juneteenth celebration that's happening this week. Can we talk about that more? You're going to have a barbecue, voter registration. Can you tell us what folks can expect when they come out this Wednesday?
Yeah, we're partnering with the Sullivan County NAACP to bring a voter registration and barbecue on Juneteenth. So from 10 a.m. to noon, it's a voter registration. And then from noon to 3 o'clock, it'll be a barbecue celebrating Juneteenth and just trying to get people to register to vote. We know that, you know, voter turnout in our area is pretty bad a lot of the time. So we definitely want to see more people come out and register to vote so that we can get those numbers up and get people a little bit more involved when it comes to voting and knowing about especially local politics. So, yeah, we will, you know, have burgers, hot dogs, things of that nature, plant-based burgers too. Yeah.
We'll also have a number of keynote speakers and music. So we're going to try to make this as festive as possible. I know people get a little bit scared about the idea of registering to vote and taking these things seriously, but I think it's important to show the gravity of the importance of it in this area, especially for our community, and do it in a manner that's not frightening anybody. There shouldn't be anything that scares people about positive change, and that's what we're here to show.
right? That's nice. You know, folks, some folks could feel disenfranchised now with what's happening in politics. So it's great that you are putting out there that the importance of voter registration. Yeah, I'm looking at the flyer now of some of the keynote speakers you have. You have Adrian Jensen, who's the executive director for Evergreen Metal Services. Sandra Oxford was the first vice president of NAACP Suffolk County chapter back in the day. You have Alicia Santiago, who's second vice president of NAACP branch, and the current president of the NAACP Suffolk County branch is David Jett. So quite a number of speakers there. They said the event starts at 10 o'clock and goes all the way to 3 o'clock. And this, in the past, I've attended some NAACP's celebration on Juneteenth. They usually can have it in the lawn of the Strobel Center. Mm-hmm. But this will be, this time around, this will be at the actual Black Library, right? We have here also another event that you have going on. And this month, we talked about a lot about, I should say. It's Saturday, June 29th. You have the Black Libraries. You're calling it Black Libraries Independence Day. And this will be a fundraising event for the Black Library. You said, mentioned the grant funding for this cycle has ended for you. We're going to end. And you're going to have sort of a celebration starting at 6 o'clock. You want to talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah. We figured it is perfect timing with Independence Day, and then this will be like our Independence Day just a couple of days before. So it's Saturday, June 29th from 6 to 9 p.m. And we're just going to be just celebrating this project and what we've done over the last 2 years, all of the successes, all of the connections, friendships, and partnerships that we've grown over the last 2 years. And just celebrate our community, celebrate our supporters, and just celebrate what we've done over the last 2 years and the impact that this project has had in the community over the last 2 years. And we're just going to be throwing this big fundraising event where we're going to have music, food, we're going to raffle things off. And yeah, just we'll have a couple of people speaking as well. So we're just trying to pack the house and just have a big celebration and really have that be a moment where we can talk more about fundraising publicly with the public and engage people when it comes to letting them know what we need and the ways that they can support us. We'll be launching our storefront that night too. So we're going to have a storefront, which we softly launched last month. So we're going to have a storefront. It has a lot of like clothing and different items that our artists make that work in the space daily. So we have a bunch of artists here that work in the space on a daily basis. So they'll have their stuff in the storefront for sale. So there's like shirts, jeans, like a lot of cut and sew materials, cut and sew items. What else? Bags, jewelry.
Prints done by artists. Yeah, a lot of upcycle clothing. We've been like big on repurposing here in the space since, as you can tell, the fact that we are a repurposed bank. But we've been big on repurposing. A lot of the items that are in the store currently are reworked items done by the artists in the space, whether it was a thrifted blank that they printed a new graphic on or completely reworked from a cut and sew standpoint. There's a lot of interesting pieces to that end. A lot of ethically done tie-dyed and some intricate styles and fashions here. We're trying to just also, aside from creating a point of commerce for the space, we're trying to showcase literally on a daily basis the talent of the artists that we have here, as well as the creativity and ability to execute on design and create products that are useful for everyday people on an everyday level.
Yeah, absolutely. You said it's great that you have this space there. You have this really built up a culture there in Monticello, in that part of the county, which I think feels very lacking. And it's great that you have done this. So kudos to you. And so where can folks get more information? Website, social media?
Yeah. So we're a lot more up to date on socials. So our Instagram is the Black Library NY. That's the same on Facebook, the Black Library NY. And our website is theblacklibraryny.com. And those are the three places to stay best up to date.
Before we go, Michael and Doug, before we go, is there anything else I have not touched on you want folks to know about?
We do have a projected renovation period that will be coming up, as we spoke about earlier in the week, that will ultimately, we will be either moving locations or working more satellite as we did for the first year of the project. We're looking for location to be the thing that we work on more so at this point. But the important thing to note is that if you do drive by in September or October and the space is not open and it doesn't appear to be open, we are not, the towel has not been thrown in. We did not lay down and die on anything. The building will be going through some changes and we will be occupying once it reopens.
Thank you for talking to me and expressing, telling your story and let me know what's happening in the Black Library. So the Juneteenth celebration is happening on Juneteenth at the Black Library in Monticello on Broadway. It starts at 10 o'clock and goes all the way to 3 o'clock. It's in partnership with the Sullivan County chapter of the NAACP. And its voter registration starts at 10 o'clock and goes all the way to noon. And then you have the Independence Day, Black Library's Independence Day, is happening on June 29th, also at the Black Library on Broadway in Monticello. Doug and Michael, again, thank you so much for talking to me. I do really appreciate it. And good luck in the future. And like I said, we definitely will talk again. And for more information, visit theblacklibraryny.com. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
In Liberty, I'm Patricio Robayo for Radio Catskill.
We'll take a break. And when we come back, Liberty Central School District expanding their pre-K program. We'll find out more. Right after a break, this is Radio Catskill.
People talk about polarization, but did you know most of us are in the hopeful majority, tired of political divisions and looking for a way out? That's why Radio Catskill and StoryCorps invite you to have a conversation with someone different and not so different than you. It's one small step where strangers get to know each other as people. Help bridge the divide, one conversation at a time. Sign up at WJFFradio.org.
StoryCorps is one small step and the radio station helps are made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Welcome back to Radio Catskill. Liberty Central School District is expanding its pre-kindergarten program in the 2024-25 school year thanks to a statewide universal full-day pre-kindergarten expansion grant. Say that 10 times. Here with more is Superintendent Dr. Patrick Sullivan. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming in. We'll get to that pre-K expansion in just a second. But while we have you, I want to ask you about the heat. Earlier this morning, Governor Kathy Hochul held a press conference and it was mentioned in the report that some upstate schools are on a half day already and some might even close later this week because of the predicted heat temperatures. What's going on with you in Liberty right now?
Yeah, that the heat advisory came late last night and noticing it and talking to some colleagues throughout the state. Interesting enough, I was informed that it was warmer in Albany than it was here at the point in time. I found that to be very interesting. It's never that case because we always seem to be 10 degrees cooler than New York City up here. But right now we're taking our regular measures, air circulators, fans placed around the schools. The middle school does have air conditioning. The high school has Regents, so that's something we want to take you can't really delay or anything like that. We need to take those tests. The elementary school we're monitoring as well. Again, trying the best to keep the shades, windows open, circulating. We will be communicating, with a letter to our community today just to kind of, inform families that we're monitoring it. And there could be a chance of an early dismissal for the elementary school. That's an old building with the three stories and it gets very hot. So we want to make sure that our children are safe and our staff are safe as the temperatures continue to increase throughout the week. So we are monitoring that, and we're going to take some steps to ensure the well-being of our schools.
All right. Now let's talk more about that pre-kindergarten program. This statewide universal full-day pre-kindergarten expansion grant, what's that and how does it help expand?
Well, it's exciting because, we've had three classrooms within our Liberty Elementary School. It was two full day and one half day course, one half day classroom, excuse me. And then the state has offered an expansion grant. We looked at it slightly last year and then just didn't have the resources to really get a lift going. And then this past year, this past school year of looking, investigating, working on that, I definitely just want to thank my assistant superintendent, Mary Ann Saratori, and assistant superintendent for business, Lorraine McKenna, and Mr. England, Robert England, our principal at the elementary school, of just really working and exploring our options and what we can do. The biggest piece is a third within the building, a third full-day classroom. So that's always been – it's a challenge for students to come to school for a half day while their peers are going for a full day. And then with sending out a request, an RFP, and a local community partner, G&D Services, at the White Sulphur Springs. They're currently at the White Sulphur Springs Elementary School. Submitted their application. We worked with them, and we submitted our hopes for the grant, and it was approved. So allowed 87 full-time students. So with that, that's a 30 more than what we could do if we were doing just three full-time classes in Liberty Elementary. And we have a lottery in place right now, and the lottery will be held on July 1, but people are still able to register. And if it's not full, and we're hoping that we're full, it's going to continuing with the registration process, but families are always welcome to register because some may move here later. They'll be putting on a wait list if there isn't availability at that point in time. But we're just really excited because we partner with G&D. It's the same curriculum, same expectations. We want to make it as similar as the educational experience that the students would have in Liberty Elementary for our Liberty students, as they will have in G&D Services as well.
So because you're having a lottery, does that mean that the number of applications has exceeded the number of available slots?
Not always. We always have a lottery. Okay. So what it goes through is when right now how the lottery would work is people would present their information depending on the number of slots. They could where they are and chosen a lottery. Would you prefer the elementary or G&D? They can choose which placement they want in some ways. But then once we exceed, because there's been a lot of times where we've had more registrants and or applications, call what you will, more than the slots we had. So we have to go through lottery. But ultimately, the lottery is the fairest way to go, however it is. So we'd rather have a lottery up front rather than right. having people sign and it gets over full. And so we always work with the lottery. It's always the fairest way to go about things for our students and their families.
But regardless, folks have to register. Mm-hmm. And that registration deadline is coming up in 10 days, June 28th.
Yes, that is correct.
For next year, folks need to get that application in by June 28th.
To be in the lottery. And that's if it's full. We're not sure if it's going to be full just yet. There are still some slots to do that. But we have been communicating throughout the community, putting up some brochures and flyers. So, trying to reach as many families as possible. If their children aren't registered with their school, they wouldn't get as much of the communication depending on what outlets we use, hence why I'm here as well.
So let me talk to you a little bit about full day versus half day. Mm-hmm. Because of this expansion, there's no longer going to be a half day program offered. But let's talk about the benefits of learning and development with this full day program for students.
Oh, it's just even what we call seat time. It's just having the students for the duration of the day, the whole day in an educational program, right? The importance of learning and socialization. It's just giving a full amount. Any child that would be going half day. There were some families that prefer half day just for childcare or personal reasons. But ultimately, it's what's in the best interest of the student to have a full day where there would be more access to the curriculum, more learning opportunities, more socialization and more chances for us to work with the student. So there's far more benefits, and that's why we're excited to have a half day, and we prefer, have a full day, and we prefer providing a full day. And it also helps a child build a relationship with the classroom staff, with the teacher and the paraprofessionals in it, because they're with them for the full day. Rather than a half day, then going home and another set of students, it just takes more time to build that relationship and get more acclimated to the procedures and the processes and the learning opportunities that a child will have in school.
It's also sort of an on-ramp into the regular school day as well when you get into
full-day kindergarten right. is all that we offer. So it could really help. It is tough for seeing our pre-K students. It's a challenging transition, and I know as a parent myself, but it takes some time, but when a student goes through a full-day pre-K and then the next year enters into kindergarten, it's just a much easier process for them to be more ready to learn.
Probably for everybody all around.
Exactly.
Parents and teachers. Yeah. So when the folks apply, register by the 28th, when will they be notified of their acceptance?
So we'll be the lottery will take place on July 1st. So sometime that week we'll let them know depending on when we conduct that, and then we reach out to families following that.
So pretty quickly after the registration closed, you'll know. So you, if you're a parent, you can plan for all of that. Where can folks go get that registration and get more information?
At our district office, 115 Buckley Street in Liberty, New York. It's the red building behind the high school is the best way to let them know.
And that's in person because folks need to bring some documentation. Right. Can you talk about some of the requirements there?
Right. So some requirements are you have to have proof of residency. There's other things, immunizations, other pieces, any other information, parent guardian information that we need, contact information, verification, just all the items, verifying the student's birth date, just so that they're eligible for it. So there's some, and that's all aligned with New York State Department of Education, those requirements for registration. So those documents would have to be provided and completed. And also we want to make sure we have all the proper contact information so we could best communicate with our families.
All right. And before we let you go, I want to mention a couple of year-end things. You've got your Wall of Fame there.
Yes. We have graduation on June 28th, and that starts at 7 o'clock. But prior to that, 5 o'clock at Liberty High School, we'll be honoring our Wall of Fame inductees, Mr. Kurt Scheibe and Maurice Gary. So we're really excited to celebrate those who have attended Liberty High School, who've just made an impact not only in our community, but throughout the world in their career or personal life. So that's very exciting. And right now, I don't want to talk about the weather too much because you don't want to jinx anything, but June 28th looks good for our graduation that will be on the football field. Access, you know, certain amount of tickets allowed for families, from the graduates, but anyone can come and view from the bleachers on the outside of the fence. And this will be our second graduation, on the football field. We had it in 2021 last year. It was, downpouring on the day of graduation. So we shed the shift back to the gymnasium. But we're very excited to restart this tradition, as this was something that the district has done 40 years ago, and it stopped for a long time. So it's such a great sight just to see the students earning their diplomas, receiving them with Senior Rock behind them, and looking on and being on the field. And so we're very excited for graduation and to celebrate our graduates who've worked very hard to complete their time here and prepare for the world beyond our schools.
I'm sure they're pretty anxious about getting to the graduation on the 28th. I'm sure some teachers and even superintendents might be looking forward to a little break. Are you getting a little break this summer?
We work year-round. They're taking some time needed. But, you know, it's funny. And I think with anyone, no matter – I mean, the students, they need to graduate, take some time, but then get prepared for life after high school. For us – And our teachers, there's work that takes place over the summer. Our teachers come in and they work on some curriculum work. Our staff come in. We have some enrichment programs at the elementary school and middle school for our students. And for us, we've already started planning for next year. We've already met with some of our building teams and our district teams to create our yearly plans for our goals for next year. And we have our more meetings to come over the summer. So we're organized and prepared and focused for the next school year. So it gets a little downtime, but there's always a good amount of work to do as we want to prepare for next September and help the next group of future graduates be successful.
That is Liberty Central School District Superintendent Dr. Patrick Sullivan. More information at libertyk12.org. Dr. Sullivan, thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too. Stay cool. All right. We'll take a break. And when we come back, Maggie Fitzpatrick is here, Moving Toward Health. That's her weekly column in the Sullivan County Democrat. And we'll hear about making health decisions easier. Thank goodness. This is Radio Chatskill.
Last year, over 100,000 people died from drug overdoses driven by fentanyl. And the fastest growing group is under 19. Fentanyl is the number one cause of overdose in Sullivan County. Whether you're a parent or an educator, you can have the right conversation now to potentially save a kid's life. Protect kids from the dangers of fentanyl. More information and resources at naturalhigh.org. Paid for by Catholic Charities of Orange, Sullivan, and Ulster.
You're on the go, and Radio Catskill can go with you. Listen live to Radio Catskill on your phone. Just type WJFFradio.org into your browser and listen wherever you are. Stay up to date on local news, culture, and NPR on the go on your phone with Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Catskill. Moving Toward Health is the weekly health and wellness column written by Maggie Fitzpatrick in the Sullivan County Democrat. And she joins us every Tuesday to tell us a little bit about it. You can check it out on the newsstands or on the website or hear it now. Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good because I didn't know that this was the subject of your column about making healthier decisions, pre-planning your meals for the week. But guess what? Breaking news. I brought my lunch today.
I pre-planned. Proud of you.
I was thinking about it last night. I had all kind of things set out on the counter this morning.
How do you feel? I feel pretty good.
I feel good.
That's amazing.
So, yeah, I feel like I'm aligned with your column this week for once.
I feel like you're aligned more often than you think.
You mentioned in your column that grocery shopping, not one of your favorite activities, but pre-planning your meal for the week does allow you to make fewer decisions every day, which that's a good way of thinking about it. Again, you're always kind of getting us to think in a different way. You're always helping us move toward health. Let's talk a little bit about how that helps you make fewer decisions.
Yeah, I like to just flip the picture around in your brain, you know? Okay, so basically what I was thinking about in this article, and there's different examples we could use, but food is a pretty easy one to understand, is that if we can group decisions together and maybe make one decision that will take care of a few of them, then that makes our life easier and less stressful, right? Mm-hmm. When it comes to our health and whatever it is we're working on at any given time, it's challenging. It's really challenging to actually accomplish those goals for many reasons that I could talk about forever, but our world doesn't make it easy on us. Right. So it's really challenging to constantly have to weigh all of these factors and make decisions about what is going to be healthiest for us in this moment. Right. To get to whatever it is we're trying to accomplish. So I really like to use lunches as an example for this because I feel like it's an easy thing to understand and then apply across the board. But I don't like grocery shopping. It's the truth. Like, it's really not my favorite activity. I kind of dread it. But if I can set myself up for success by planning out my grocery list thoroughly, right? Making sure that I'm actually buying enough food for the week. And I'm actually making sure that those foods that I buy make meals. You know, when you go to the grocery store and sometimes you come home and you're like, how did this happen?
What is going on here? Yeah.
Like, I don't actually have anything to make, you know?
Yeah.
If I can try to avoid that as much as possible with some planning. And like I said, I like to use lunch as an example. If I can make one decision before I go to the grocery store of what am I going to eat for lunch this week that is in alignment with my goals, now I don't have to make that decision every day, right? I don't have to think about what am I going to eat? How am I going to make it? Do I have the food? Do I need to go back to the store? If you have to make all those decisions every single day, that's really stressful and frustrating, right? So something we want to think about is how can I maybe batch those decisions together, group them together, so that way I can make those decisions once and not have to repeat it over and over and over. And what that will do is it will free up a lot of space for us to do other things or do nothing, right? Like, we just get that space back.
Well, you know, it's when you mentioned shopping and coming home with things that don't quite add up to a meal, I've kind of found that because I live in Calicoon, my farmer's market's on Sunday. Mm-hmm. And when I was here as a weekender, I was always like, oh, I can't really buy that much because I'm going back to the city. Now I'm here full time and I'm like, this is great. Like, I can plan for the whole week. So I'm buying what looks good. I'm not necessarily coming in with an idea of what I want to make, but it's like, oh, look at this. This looks good today. This looks good today. And then bringing it home and knowing you have this bounty of locally produced food, which you know where it came from, that's a great benefit. But just having it there and then being able to like put some things together, get some proteins from the grocery store or wherever, and then come up with that idea, that's sort of helpful as well. And it makes me feel more excited about making those decisions about lunch. Because when it comes to lunch, I sit at my desk, if I don't plan, I think, oh, what am I going to do?
Right. And then that lowers all of your energy and mood of everything else that surrounds it.
Yeah.
Right. But I love what you just said there because there's layers to this, right?
Yeah.
You can fully plan out everything that you're looking for down to what you're going to make and the ingredients and the amounts you're going to need if you want to. Or you can just do one layer at a time, like what you're talking about. Okay, I'm going to go make sure that I bring home enough food to eat. And then that at least eliminates that whole part of the repeated decision, right? Yeah. So yeah, it doesn't have to be like all or nothing.
I used to do that, though. I think it was all or nothing. And then you get tired of deciding, which you mentioned in your article, that you become tired of deciding and that you need to kind of, focus on what's most important to you right now.
Yeah, exactly. We have to make so many decisions each day. And something I said in there that this is really relevant to me. I feel like it probably is for most people, but you don't really think about all the decisions that you're making until you're tired of making decisions, you know, and that point hits and you're like, I just cannot make another decision today. So if we can set ourselves up to maybe push that point off a little farther or not get there because we're setting ourselves up for success earlier. That's really helpful. But something I was actually talking with my husband about yesterday that applies, it was like a slightly different take on this, but being organized and being a little bit more planned out when it comes to our health is really important because when we're not, it creates chaos for the rest of our day. Right. And I was thinking about even like I'm video recording this interview right now so I can post it on social media. Right. So I have a tripod holding up my phone. And a couple of weeks ago, my tripod was not in the place where I usually put it because my husband used it and he put it back somewhere else. And I texted him and I was like, where is my tripod? Because I'm leaving the house. Right. And I'm looking for this thing that is supposed to be in this place. And when I have all of my things organized in the places that I need them, that makes my day go so much smoother. I don't have to think about those things, right? But when we are not organized, whether it comes to our health goals or where our tripod is, then we are adding that thought process, that stress, that figuring it out onto things that we don't necessarily need to be using our brain power on in that moment, right? Yeah, right. So if we can organize ourselves to reach those goals, it makes everything a lot easier.
Yeah. And you also mentioned about making decisions that could be automated or chosen ahead of time, too. Like we mentioned, you know, just bringing home some foods that you can choose from in categories to make your lunch. But also you mentioned this, which we are benefits of now with technology, being able to automate some decisions.
Yeah. So that could be like they could look like your workouts, right? Maybe you plan your workouts ahead of time and they're all in an app because you pay for a subscription, or maybe you just plan it out ahead of time and use an Excel sheet or whatever. So that way you don't have to think about that decision in the moment, right? Or it could be a little bit more manual automation, like going back to the food. It could be meal prepping the food for the week. So that way I'm cooking it all at once and then I just go and pull it out of the fridge. Mm-hmm. And that's automation, right? Yeah. That is automation for your future self, even though you are the person that's putting in the work, right? It could be a use of technology. It could be a use of like yourself and your effort in one given time that then helps you moving forward.
But my future self is now grateful because of the prep that I did and the lunch I'll have shortly after the show.
1 hour from now, Tim is going to be really happy. Yeah.
Thank you, Maggie Fitzpatrick. Maggie Fitzpatrick is the health and wellness columnist for the Sullivan County Democrat. Her column is Moving Toward Health. It's out every Tuesday on newsstands now or scdemocratonline.com. Do you have your meal prep for today?
I actually do have some food prepped in the fridge. I don't always, but today I do. So
look at
we
us.
Did it.
We're killing it. Yep. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll take a break. And when we come back, the Deepwater Literary Festival will speak to one of the local authors who's appearing this weekend, Jennifer Cabot. This is Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Farm Arts Collective, located on Willow Wisp Organic Farm in Damascus, Pennsylvania. Farm Arts Collective's programs intersect the practices of farming, performance, food, and ecology. FarmArtsCollective.org. From the Community Foundation of Orange and Sullivan, a publicly supported philanthropic institution, CFOSNY.org. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Hi, Ira Flatow here from Science Friday. We view Sci-Fry as a refreshing break from the daily bombardment of political news. You know, there's lots of important and interesting science and technology out there. Whether it's the deep, dark mysteries of the universe or your deep, dark microbiome, it's all right here. So start your weekends with thought-provoking news on Radio Catskill.
This is Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The Deepwater Literary Festival returns to Narrowsburg this weekend, and Radio Catskill is proud to be a media partner. Every day this week, we're featuring authors and events from the festival. When Jennifer Cabot moved from London to the Catskills in 2005, she had no idea it was the site of the Anti-Rent War, an 1840s episode of American rural populism. Wandering the mountains and building friendships within the local community, Cabot's book, The Eighth Moon, weaves a multi-layered meditation on history, resistance, and nature in part of upstate New York that's long been a refuge for New Yorkers. Cabot will be in conversation with Deepwater Literary Festival co-director Aaron Hicklin this Saturday at 5:30 in Krause Hall, presented in association with the DVAA and Radio Catskill. And Jennifer Cabot joins us this morning. Hello.
Hi, Tim.
Thanks for being here. I wanted to ask you, for folks who may not be as familiar with American rural populism, can you tell us a little bit about what the anti-rent war was and then how you discovered this when you moved here?
Yeah. So the anti-rent war was this radical and kind of wild moment that spread first from across the Hudson. So I'm in Delaware County on the same side of the Hudson as you there in Sullivan County. When the Dutch originally settled New York State, they gave out huge land patents to very wealthy people. And the people who farmed that land lived as tenant farmers in perpetual peonage. And that policy extended, the English continued it after they took over New York, and even after the Revolution. So all of this land across upstate New York was held in these kind of fiefdoms by very, very wealthy men and sometimes women, and their tenant farmers would live with these onerous leases where their rents would increase and increase and increase. And finally, what happened in 1839 was that the farmers said no more. And they had a radical plan, and that plan was to redistribute all the land and it to be held communally. And in the most radical vision of this, there would be no centralized government. So they were these kind of socialists at a moment when there was a lot of utopian socialism happening, the 1848 uprisings in Europe, but also across New York State, there were all these utopian communes being built at the same time. So that was the uprising, and it ended in a very violent shootout in Andes, New York, in August of 1845.
Wow. I mean, this is a piece of history that I wasn't very familiar with. And you've used this as the basis of your book, The Eighth Moon. I mentioned in the introduction that you kind of build friendships and spoke to people in the local community to understand more about this. This evolved over time. Can you talk about the process of writing this book?
So the process, it's like when you're writing a book like this, it's like a decade's worth of research. And part of it was originally like, I live on this 50 acres of land and I wanted to know the provenance of it. Like, who was here first? Like, obviously there were the Muncie inhabitants who predated the white settlers, and that history is very hard to uncover. But then I started to look at the property deeds and I realized, well, one of the people who had lived on this land was a tenant farmer. And then the other one, who had been a tenant farmer too, eventually came to own his land, but he was arrested for manslaughter in 1845. And I was like, huh, so can I learn more about this? And that person who was arrested for manslaughter was arrested in the rent war, which he took part in. And then another piece came together. I went to visit my friend, Rudd Hubble, whose family has been here for about 200 years. And one day I'm over at his house and he pulls this box off a shelf that has a disguise from the anti-rent war. And these disguises were illegal. So, New York State made a law in January 1845 banning masks and disguises. So all the kind of activists and militants in that rent war were wearing these disguises and masks. And that law was only overturned in 2020. Mm. So here's this friend who pulls out this box for me. And he's like, put it on. And I was like, oh my God, is this real? I thought they'd all been burned, but it was. And so basically these little leaves of this history just kept falling into my lap. And eventually I went to the county courthouse and read all the arrest records for the 248 individuals who were hauled in after the shooting in Andes.
The Southern Review of Books said that the feeling of being unbalanced permeates the Eighth Moon, and your, quote, luminous book seeks to make sense of family politics and land today through a lens of the past. It also mentions that you walk the line between outsider and community member. Can you talk a little bit about that in the aspect of writing this book?
Yeah, of course. Like, well, I moved here from London, from the UK. And so, of course, I'm going to be an outsider. And when you have families here who've like been here for like 200 years, you know, I could be here for the rest of my life and I will still be an outsider. But I'm also a member of my fire department. So
I was going to ask you about that. You joined the local fire department.
Yeah, I mean, like, I lived around the corner for a long time from the fire hall, and I would feel very guilty every time the alarm went off at, like, 2 or 3 in the morning, knowing, A, that, like, there weren't a lot of people in the, you know, who were serving, and that a lot of those people were sort of aging out of what the fire service required of them. And serving is also a way to say that you're part of a community and belong. And, you know, I'm a pretty committed socialist. Like, the book is also grappling with my socialist politics and my parents' politics. They worked on co-ops. And, you know, fire departments are the most basic form of mutual aid we have. And in a way, a kind of collectivist space. However, the politics skews a little to the right often. So I thought it was really important to join.
Yeah. How's it been so far? Have you enjoyed it?
I love it. And I love my department. Like, we're actually, when I joined, there weren't a ton of women, but I wasn't the only woman and I certainly wasn't the first. And, you know, being in the department, I kind of feel like the most useful thing I do is say that you too, people who have not come from here, who don't come from being like legacy fire service families, you can do it. Like, if I can do it, like, anybody can, because this is like, I have no skills for this. This is not being a writer. I can parse a sentence, but I am like not great at all the other stuff. But I've learned, yeah.
And it's helped you become more connected and more part of the community, and therefore kind of more part of the connection of all the stuff that you're weaving together in the book.
Yeah, so it's definitely embedded me in the community, and the book is about that. It's about discovering community, both in the present tense and the past. And most of the people I serve with in their fire department, their forebears were part of that uprising. And their politics now are not necessarily what their forebears were. And so it's a really interesting moment to be there and to be like, hey, did you know? I read your relative's arrest record.
This is sure to be a fascinating conversation. It is at the Deepwater Literary Festival this Saturday, 5:30 in the evening, Krauss Hall in Narrowsburg. You'll be in conversation with the co-director of the festival, Aaron Hicklin. And we are proud to present that in association with the Delaware Valley Arts Alliance. Jennifer Cabot, author of The Eighth Moon, look forward to hearing more on Saturday at the Deepwater Literary Festival. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me, Tim. I appreciate it.
All right. That's all for this edition of Radio Chatskill. We will be back tomorrow with more. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Farm Arts Collective, located on Willow Wisp Organic Farm in Damascus, Pennsylvania. Farm Arts Collective's programs intersect the practices of farming, performance, food, and ecology. FarmArtsCollective.org. From the Community Foundation of Orange and Sullivan, a publicly supported philanthropic institution, CFOSNY.org, and from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Hi there, this is Brian, host of The Secret Show, Friday nights at 9. I'll be playing a mix of indie, alternative, college, rock, and pop. Some new music and some old classics. That's The Secret Show, Friday nights at 9. only on Radio Catskill. Listen local.
WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming live at WJFFradio.org. This is Radio Catskill. Sunny, hot, and humid. A heat advisory in effect from noon today till 8 p.m. on Thursday. Stay hydrated when you're outside in the heat. At the top of the show, I told you what the real feel heat index was. It's gone up 6 degrees. Now feels like 96 outside. Stay safe. Stay cool. It's 11 o'clock.